This one is this particular book. I don't know what you call it, orange. Understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha, a compilation of emails. I will pass down. If you have already received, you pass it on. If you have not, you can take a copy.
Seekers, friends, and meditators
will be able to make use of this and grow short notes or emails to develop a better and true understanding of the Buddhist meditation as taught by the Buddha, so that they may progress along the path of Dhamma to become more virtuous, noble, and wiser living beings, to benefit themselves and benefit others. And the summary of content, email number one is handful of leaves. The first email dated 22nd August 2006 was written to a United States-based Buddhist group. This one is actually Dhammasuka at yahoo.com, and it talks about handful of leaves as emphasized by the Buddha at Kosambi in the Sipsapa group over 2500 over years ago. It also stressed on the importance of the Four Noble Truths, or the handful of leaves as taught by the Buddha. So when we mention this word handful of leaves, it refers to the Four Noble Truths. Then email number two is, what is meditation? So this one is the second email dated 29, which was 1 week later, August 2006. And it was written as a reply to a gentleman who inquired on meditation. It explained the importance of knowing what is meditation as taught by the Buddha. Then, what is meditation? Part 2. The third email, dated 30th the next day, August 2006, was written to some Dhamma practitioner from the United States-based Buddhist group website, and it stressed on the importance of avoiding meditation questions that leads to doubt. We are not knowing or understanding what is meditation. Then the final summary of the First Noble Truth and the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths were introduced as topic for contemplation and reflection. So all this you can develop the understanding. Then email number 4 is about the three turnings and 12 modes of the Four Noble Truths. Fourth and closed email dated 30th and 31st August 2006 were based on a very beautiful question by a sister, and it explained the three turnings and the 12 modes of the Four Noble Truths leading to the three types of corresponding wisdom: Suttamaya Panya, Chittamaya Panya, and Bhavanamaya Panya, as taught by the Buddha via his first sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. A copy of the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta has been included under the Appendix A to serve as reference. Then the fifth email, Metta and Vipassana Meditation for Beginners. The fifth enclosed email dated 5th of October 2006 and 8th of October 2006 were written to a Dhamma friend, a sister, who wants to learn how to develop the Buddhist meditation as taught by the Buddha, to help her develop the faith, inner peace and wisdom to live a happy, peaceful and noble life that is free of dukkha or suffering or unhappiness. This email gave simple but very direct and much focused instruction for beginners to develop both the vipassana or insight and metta or loving kindness meditation. Then the sixth email was written to the Spencer Meditation Group from Charleston, West Virginia, United States of America. It was written as a commentary on the breath-centered and four-posture meditation as taught by the Buddha for a two-day workshop to be held on the 9th and 10th of October 2006 in Charleston, West Virginia, United States of America. Then email number 7, the 7th enclosed email were based on a reply to a brother email circular dated 20th September 2006. Inviting Brother Teo to deliver a Sunday Dhamma talk on the topic of meditation training.
Developing Calm and Insight at Kotak Company Buddhist Center. This email spells out the summarized format of the ongoing weekly 3 to 6 p.m. Saturday meditation Kam Dhamma class conducted by Brother Teo at Kampaka Buddhist Lodge. So all these are very useful emails. So now we go to the acknowledgement. Acknowledgement is standard. Is the donor's intention that this enclosed note be given free to all who are interested, and as such, we would like to take this opportunity to thank and rejoice in the wholesomeness of all those Dhamma friends who have donated and helped in the typing, typesetting, proofreading, etc. to make this free distribution of Dhamma Dana possible. With metta always, and may all beings be well and happy, and may they too be free from all suffering soon as possible. Then there is these words of wisdom by the Buddha extracted from Dhammapada verse. Verse 1, 2, 183, verse 21, 22, and 23. And the final one is the Buddha's advice before he passed away. Or his Parinibbana. These are very important Dhammapada verse on avoiding all evil, do good, and purify the mind via the right view with regard to law of karma. So all this you will learn when you are at the retreat too. These are the important Dhammapada verses that I extracted from the Dhammapada book. Verse 1 and 2, these are the twin opposite verse on the mind. According to the Buddha, he said, our mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. It once speaks, acts, and thinks with a wicked or unwholesome mind. Then suffering will follow one, like the wheel that follow the hook of the cart. So this is Dhammapada verse 1. If you are heedless, if you don't train your mind, you allow your mind to heedlessly arise the evil result of hatred and delusion, then your mind becomes evil, unwholesome, wicked. That's how suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follow the hook of the cart. Then Dhammapada verse is the twin opposite verse. The Buddha repeat, our mind is a forerunner of all things, mind is chief. Everything arises when the mind arises. So if you understand the importance of mind, then you will train your mind. And after you train your mind, the Buddha says, if you speak, act, and think with a pure or wholesome mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then happiness will follow you like the shadow. Then Dhammapada 1, verse 183 is the famous advice of all Buddhas when they arise. In Pali, they always chant it as Sabba Papasa Akarana Usalesa Upasampada Sachitta Pariyodhapana Eta Virana Sasana. The meaning is their advice is always the same. All evil you have to avoid. Wherever there is condition to develop wholesomeness, you should do. Then finally, you have to purify your mind. That's the advice of all Buddha. Then next page, Dhammapada verse on heedfulness or Appamada Vaga. Heedfulness in Pali is called Appamada. They are verse 21 until verse 40. But of the 20 verses within Appamada Vaga, the first three are the most important. The Buddha reminded the monk under verse 21, he said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful do not die, and the heedless are extinct. teaching is on training the mind to be heedful. The moment you are heedful, you are destined for enlightenment. That's why he said the heedful does not die. And before his parinibbana or passing away, his advice to the Buddha, to the disciple or the monks is the same. He said, apamadena sampadena, strive on with heedfulness. So again, the emphasis is just to train your mind to develop this quality of heedfulness, which is the most important quality of Buddhist meditation. So all of our training is to develop this particular aspect of mind, which the Buddha called it heedfulness. As I just now, before we commenced the trip, in the briefing, I did mention to you this particular retreat, you can make full use of it in understanding and train yourself accordingly to develop this ability of mindfulness leading to heedfulness. Then you will transform, and when you transform, you will transform from a heedless way of living into a heedful way of living. And that is the reason why the Buddha said the heedless never die, whereas the heedless are asleep there. So if you cannot be heedful in the midst of life, you don't stand a chance to become enlightened. That's why heedfulness or heedful living is very important. The retreat is the best place to train your mind to develop the ability to be heedful throughout the day. Then you have to carry this mindset that you have developed into your daily life. If you can't do it, your meditation will not take off. It will not help. Because the moment you are out of the retreat, if you return to heedlessness or heedless living, then you have wasted all your training. Because if in the midst of life you are heedless, the Buddha said you are existing. So most of the time you are existing, except when you are maybe training yourself at the retreat. So meditation is not this way. Meditation is about understanding the danger of heedlessness, the importance of having this mind that is constantly awake, ever mindful, to cultivate the meditation and stuff by the Buddha, which is the Noble Eightfold Path, which is what heedfulness is all about. So if you cannot be ever mindful in the midst of life to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, to develop heedfulness, then you don't stand a chance. So real meditation is not about sitting, walking, seeking peace and all those things. These are byproducts of meditation that can come if you train your mind well. But this is not meditation. These are byproducts of meditation. Okay, now I will read to you verse 21. Oh, this one we have covered, huh? Faithfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful do not die, whereas the heedless are asleep dead. Then verse 22, Dhammapada verse 22, it explains further what heedfulness is. The Buddha said, distinctly understanding the difference between heedfulness and heedlessness, the wise one intends on heedfulness, and they will rejoice in the rhyme of the Arya, or the enlightenment. So this again points clearly towards the fact that the moment you are heedful, or when you intend on heedfulness, determined to be heedful, you will also rejoice in the rhyme of the Arya, or the enlightenment. Means you will become enlightened, like all these enlightened beings. That's how you can rejoice of that. Then Dhammapada verse 23 confirms what the Buddha wants to let you understand. The constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one, they will definitely realize the bond-free supreme nirvana. So this is the Buddha's definition of heedfulness. The first requirement of heedfulness is constantly meditating, means constantly cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path. Then the second part is ever mindful. that's the reason why when you go for retreat or meditation training, the first thing you do is to develop mindfulness. Then you have to stabilize it until it becomes ever mindful. If you cannot be ever mindful in the midst of life, you don't set a chance. Which means you cannot be heedful. So those who hold on to these two practices, constantly meditative and ever mindful, they will definitely realize the Supreme Bodily Divine. So the whole of meditation boils down to this very important quality of mind that the Buddha called heedful. And to be heedful, you have to train your mind to be ever mindful. Then use it to constantly meditate on the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, especially the three turnings and the 12 walks. Then the last of the words of wisdom is the Buddha's advice before his parinibbana. Appamadena sampadena. Just three simple, four simple words. Strive on the heedfulness. The moment you can develop this mind to be heedful, you are hope. That's why you only need to strive on to develop the heedfulness. And you will be successful in your meditation. So this is a very important advice. That's the reason why when you are at the retreat, always remember, you are there to develop this quality of mind for heedfulness. Means initially train your mind to be mindful, then stabilize it so that it can become ever mindful throughout the day. Whatever you do, all your action and movement, you can be with the moment, in awareness, to be mindful of it. Then after your mind is already trained, the stability of mindfulness is there. Then you can use it to constantly reflect, contemplate, inquire, and cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And this is the most important training. That's the reason why I always say life itself is the meditation. Okay, now we go to email number one, Handfuls of Leaves. So this email I wrote to this Dhammasutta group. I think catered by an American man. Now his name is Vimala Ramsey. Earlier on he has another name, I think Venerable Jiro Sato. So I will read to you the email. Greetings to all Dhamma friends of Ayanamitas. I am Gil from Malaysia and am new to your group, but have been following some of your discussion recently. I wish to participate in a small way by sharing my little understanding of the Buddha Dhamma. Yes, I fully agree that one should be heedful and focus only on the cultivation or practice of the Four Noble Truths, as advised by the Buddha via his analogy of the handful of leaves and prosapi in the Simsapa group, which I quote. Once the Buddha was living at Kosambi in the Simsapa group, then gathering a handful of leaves in his hand, the Buddha addressed the bhikkhu. What do you think, man? Which is greater in quantity? The handful of Simsapa leaves gathered by me, or what is in the forest? Then the monk answered, not many but venerable sir are the leaves in the handful gathered by the blessed one. Many other leaves in the forest. Then the Buddha told the monk, even so, monk, many other things that I have fully realized, but not declared out to you. Few other things I have declared out to you. Then why, monk, have I not declared them? They, monk, are indeed not useful, not conducive, are not essential to the holy life of purity. They do not lead to dispassion, detachment, to tranquility, to full understanding, to cessation, to enlightenment, and to nirvana. That is why monk, they are not declared by me. And what is it, monk, that I have declared? This is the noble truth of dukkha. This have I declared. This is the noble truth of the cause of arising of dukkha. This have I declared. This is the noble truth of the cessation of dukkha. This have I declared. This is the noble truth that leads to the cessation of dukkha. This have I declared. So these are the four noble truths. And why, monk, have I declared this truth? They are indeed useful, conducive, and are essential to the holy life of purity. They lead to disgust, to dispassion, to detachment, to tranquility, to full understanding, to cessation, to enlightenment, and to nirvana. That is why, monk, they are declared by me. Thus spoke the Buddha. This advice as given by the Buddha is so beautiful. So why not we just focus on the handful of leaves, the four noble truths? Noble truths that can make you noble or enlightened one. Then truth will dawn upon us, like what the Buddha said under the salutation to the Dhamma. That is, the Dhamma is to be realized by the wise, each for themselves. This advice will enable us to avoid discussing irrelevant topics or issues that more often than not only lead to more doubt, and at times, if we are not mindful enough, it may also cause unnecessary misunderstanding and argument, etc., leading to wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, hence violating all the noble info bound factor. So why not we just stay focused on the noble truth that can help us in our practice and meditation as advised by the Buddha? So this was the reply that I wrote to them, because they were arguing over many other not so relevant type of argument. Then after I wrote the email, somebody replied. That one I will continue over the other email. Then this one is another question. Email number 2. The title is, what is meditation? This question is very interesting, and this question, they posted it on the website. They said, somebody posted it, they said, having done the Mahasi meditation for a long time, I'm trying to get my mind around the Anapanasati taught here, where this American group, they reverse the practice from the Burmese traditional Mahasi technique or method back to Anapanasati, which they believe is directly from the Sutta. So this particular person who wrote the email, he has this question. He said, having done the Mahasi meditation for a long time, I'm trying to get my mind around the Anapanasati talk here. I read the book, but I'm still not quite sure as to where the attention is to be placed. I'm comfortable with noticing sensation in the belly area, like Mahasi side of instructions. However, perhaps that is too specific, and a more general noticing of the breath and just letting the mind down calm. Then calm down to it might be the instruction. Can anybody comment on what seems to work for them? So this was the question that was posted on the website. Then I replied, you have asked a very good question, and maybe I can start the ball rolling by sharing my little experience regarding this matter. Yes, the best person to answer your question directly is Bhante himself, which is the abbot there. But I will just approach it from a slightly different manner by focusing more on the handful of leaves rather than to answer your question directly, and I hope you don't mind. To me, after several years of serious meditative investigation, I come to realize one very important truth or understanding in regard to meditation. That is, we need to understand what is meditation instead of clinging to meditation techniques or methods and teachers, because the method never defines the meditation. Maybe it can act as an initial skillful means or aid, like a float to assist you initially to learn how to swim. To really know how to swim, you must let go of the float and believe that your body can float and reach a natural state of balance or buoyancy if you don't try to do anything. That is, let go completely and you will float. Then swimming becomes very natural and easy. Our mind is more or less the same. That is, its natural state is already the meditative state, or in the state of balance or equanimity or stillness. So just be silent mentally and don't try to do anything. Don't even try to use the mind to meditate, because that is the thought. If you do it, it will disrupt that natural state, because the thinking mind cannot meditate. But because of ignorance or avijja, the normal human mind has this wrong view to constantly arise the thinking or mental activity called sankhara, leading to the arising of the mental consciousness vijnana that support the arising of the five aggregates of form and mind nama rupa. Hence, trickling of the whole chain of dependent origination or dwelling, leading to dukkha, finally. Likewise, when you really know what is meditation, then you will naturally know how to meditate at any place, any time, and under any circumstances. And you will not be constrained and deluded by your attachment to method, techniques, and teacher. Basing on the analogy of the handful of leaves by the Buddha, it is pretty obvious that the Noble Eightfold Path itself is the meditation, because according to the Buddha, he proclaimed under the form of the truth, the path that leads to the cessation of all suffering or dukkha, or leading to the realization of Nibbana, is the Noble Eightfold Path. That is, any cultivation or meditative approach or practices that can bring about the fulfillment of all these Noble Eightfold Path factors of right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and right living, or right effort, and right mindfulness, or samadhi, and right samadhi, the firm and unwavering mind born of wisdom in equanimity. With clear awareness within is the real meditation. Then meditation becomes very simple and very straightforward. And what the Buddha said about apamada or heedfulness becomes very meaningful. That is, starting from heedfulness, which is to be ever mindful of the cultivation. We shall develop the first path factor of right view. In regards to the law of karma, the four noble truths, and the law of dependent origination, or law of cause and effect, we are the first two learning of the four noble truths to develop the suttamaya panya and cittamaya panya wisdom. Once we have these three important right views cultivated, then we develop the rest of the path factor. Then developing the rest of the path factor will become very natural and straightforward. The first right view with regards to the law of karma will enable us to be very, very wary of our karma. That is, we will strive on to take care of our karma at all times. To do this, you will have to avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind, which is the advice of all the Buddhas. To avoid all evils and do good, we will have to constantly cultivate the right thought, like metta, compassion, and the 37 factors of enlightenment. All the virtues like generosity, contentment, patience, gratitude, humility, etc., which are free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Hence, we will see this rather important factor of right view leading to right thought. And since our thoughts have mental intention, born of our views, hence wrong view will condition wrong thought. That is, if your views are wrong, your thought will be wrong. And since thoughts, mental intention, conditions, speech, action, and the way you live your life, all the subsequent noble eightfold path factor will be wrong too. Now we see the importance of right view or right understanding, and why the Buddha put it as the first path factor within the noble eightfold path. This right view is to counter the wrong view born of avijja, which is ignorance. So now you see how important this right view is, because it is to enable you to weaken the first link of avijja paccaya sankhara. Once avijja is weakened, then your sankhara or mental activity, volition, formation, tendency, and mental states, etc., will become less and less. That is, your usual mundane thinking, born of ignorance, will start to slow down. Then only your sati or mindfulness can shine forth to develop the necessary, more refined type of mindfulness or abhamana required for further practice and cultivation. Mindfulness at this level, that is, when your daily mindfulness or sati is already quite stable, will enable you to arise the appropriate mindfulness needed for true Dhamma investigation, to develop the inside knowledges or wisdom that will strengthen or refine your right view. After that, the sati, when supported by the more refined right view, will arise the samasati path factor. This samasati, together with the four right efforts, will bring about the perfection of right thought, path factor, leading to right speech, right action, etc. This is how it has helped me, and I hope it is of use to you all. From my understanding, this path of practice requires a lot of patience, diligence, and faith in the triple jhana. Yes, I have taken up too much of your time, and thank you for reading. May the blessing of the triple jhana be with you all. Be with all beings, always. With metta, always. And gratitude. So this was the email that I replied to them. Then somebody replied, this lady, the name is quite special, Naga Shrine. He replied, I have little to add to Theo's excellent response, but I will throw in my 2 cents anyway. Anapanasati started to move when I stopped trying to locate the breath or fix on it. I was aware of it in a peripheral way, but not interested in where the sensation was during this or that session. The key is to understand that the Buddha is not asking one to do anything in meditation. It is a very radical departure for me, as I was accustomed to striving of one sort or another, either through visualization or internal verbalized dialogue as contemplation. And I measure my assumed success according to the manifestation of my desired result. Jhana is abundant, not an attachment. The 6 R's are a very good indication of how to proceed. Expectations are a hindrance to the natural state. Hope this helps. So, after I explained, I think a lot of them came to realize what they do was not so appropriate or correct. That's why this particular Naga Shrine, he responded. Then I replied, say he, so and so and all, just to share a similar experience regarding all this meditation question or doubt. I was trapped in the same way like most meditators who always want to know how to meditate, instead of understanding what is meditation. That is, which method or technique or teacher is better. And after deciding on the method or technique or teacher to follow, we will go on to ask, where do we fix our attention? And how do we do all the noting and meditation, etc.? Not knowing that these are doubts created by the thought to delude us, and doubts are actually one of the five mental hindrances of mind. As mental hindrance will hinder the mind from entering the meditative state, it will be very difficult to develop the meditation effectively if there are these doubts. Instead, one should develop the five spiritual faculties, positive mental spiritual faculties of Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Mind to counter the hindrance of mind. I also came to realize that these questions are all not so relevant, because they are not the handful of leaves as taught by the Buddha. Hence, I started to reverse my questioning and inquiry to focus only on the handful of leaves, by inquiring into the following. Why did the Buddha summarize all of dukkha as the attachment or grasping to the five aggregate of form and mind under the first noble truth, final summary? Hence, realizing the importance of understanding this five aggregate of form and mind, and how clinging and attachment to them comes to be. Then the second inquiry is, why did the Buddha say via his Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, his first sermon, that not until he himself have understood the Four Noble Truths in his three turnings and his 12 more, he cannot proclaim to have become the Sammasambuddha? And why is the understanding of the Four Noble Truths under his three turning and 12 more so important? And how, by understanding the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, can lead to the realization of the three types of correspondent wisdom, that is Sutta-maya-panya, Chitta-maya-panya, and Bhavana-maya-panya. This has helped me a lot, and I hope it can be of similar help to you all. Bye, and with metta always, relative. So this third email was very important. Then it prompted another of the respondent who replied to me and said, "Hey Theo, yesterday I was listening to one of Bhante's talk about metta in daily life, and I cringe as he told the story of how he had root canal dental treatment without anesthesia. Reading your post about how Lord Buddha summarized or sum up the first noble truth, saying that the Buddha summarized all of dukkha as attachment or grasping to the five aggregates of form and mind, I realized just how far away from non-attachment to body and mind, and how much closer Bhante is, and how it results in reduction in suffering, though not pain and the mere sensation of mind, even as we get closer, if not all the way yet. What an inspiration to practice. Thank you for that. Please could you tell me what the three turnings and the 12 modes of the Four Noble Truths are?" So because of this question, I replied under the subsequent email and elaborated on the three turnings and 12 modes of the Four Noble Truths. So the other email is on this three turnings and then 12 more of the Four Noble Truths. So maybe I will stop at page 18, and we will continue afterwards. You can have a rest first, while I have a drink. Continue from where we stop. Turn to page 19. Understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha. A compilation of email. it should be page 18. Alright. Page 18. This is the reply. Thank you for your metta and beautifully worded question. I really rejoice. Understanding the Four Noble Truths under the Three Turnings and the 12 Modes are extremely important for those who want to realize the enlightenment. Even the then Buddha to be is not exempted from it, because in his proclamation of the Dhamma addressing the five ascetics, the Buddha said, so long as my knowledge and vision of reality regarding the Four Noble Truths in its three phases or turnings and 12 modes were not fully clear to me, I did not proclaim to have realized the incomparable supreme enlightenment in the world. But when my knowledge and vision of the reality regarding the Four Noble Truths were fully clear to me, then I proclaim to have won the incomparable supreme enlightenment in this world. So just imagine, even the Buddha to be emphasized so strongly on this way of understanding of the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths are true, are noble truths or aren't true, because they are truths that can be made. They are true that can make you noble ones or Arya, the enlightened ones. If you cultivate them accordingly. Hence, that's the reason why the Buddha called it the Noble Truth and not just ordinary universal truth. In the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, or the first sermon of the Buddha said the Four Noble Truths three times. Since there are four truths, so 4 by 3 is 12, hence the 12 modes. You want the bass of the music?
Yeah.
Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, or the first sermon of the Buddha said the Four Noble Truths three times. Since there are four truths, so 4 times 3 is 12, hence the 12 modes. In the first turning, the Buddha just proclaimed the Four Noble Truths in their numerical order. This is the first turning. So the first turning is always on the proclamation of the Noble Truth by the Buddha. For example, the first Noble Truth the Buddha proclaimed. Now this old bhikkhu is the Aryan truth of dukkha. Birth, always sickness and death are dukkha. To be with people whom you don't like is dukkha. To be separated from your loved ones is dukkha. Not able to get what one desires is also dukkha. And in short, it is these five aggregates of form and mind, which are the aggregates of grasping that I call dukkha, followed by the proclamation of the second, third, and the fourth Noble Truth. Through hearing of this Noble Truth as proclaimed by the Buddha, the type of wisdom called Suttamayapanya, or wisdom born of hearing the Sutta or discourse of the Buddha, can arise. Just like the case of Venerable Kundanya, one of the five ascetics who became enlightened. He became a Sotapanna upon hearing this first sermon of the Buddha. Likewise with Venerable Sariputta, he just inquired from Venerable Asaji, also one of the five ascetics, as to what his teacher had taught him. Venerable Asaji just mentioned two very simple verses or truths taught by the Buddha, and Venerable Sariputta also became a Sotapanna. So this proclamation of truth under the first turning can be very powerful, and for certain people who have the distraction coming fast by those of Venerable Kundanya and Venerable Sarita. Enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. We are just hearing the noble truth as proclaimed. The second turning is very unique and important, because under the second turning of the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha put forth the different emphasis for all the four truths as follows. First Noble Truth, second turning, the Buddha said, this Noble Truth of Dukkha is to be understood. Then second Noble Truth, the second turning, the Buddha said, the cause of the arising of Dukkha, which is craving, is to be abandoned. Then the third Noble Truth, the second turning, the Buddha said, the cessation of Dukkha is to be realized. Then the fourth Noble Truth, second turning, this Noble Eightfold Path that leads to the end of all suffering is to be cultivated. So under this second turning, we need to inquire, why did the Buddha say all this? Why did he say that this Noble Truth of Dukkha is to be understood? And how can we develop that understanding? To do that, we need heedfulness or a farmer to constantly reflect and contemplate on this Noble Truth as proclaimed by the Buddha. Through this constant inquiry and contemplation plus reflection on the Noble Truth, a second type of wisdom called Chittamaya Panya can arise. That is, after hearing the truth, we need to slowly develop a clearer and more refined understanding. Via this constant contemplation and reflection on this truth, only then can we stabilize our understanding to develop the Chittamaya Panya wisdom, the second turning wisdom. Please note that when it comes to the second turning of the Four Noble Truths, the emphasis is on cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path instead of just understanding it as it is, in the case of the second turning of the First Noble Truth. Similarly, the emphasis on the second turning of the second noble truth is on abandoning the cause of suffering. And then of the second turning of the third noble truth is the cessation of dukkha is to be realized. So all this needs inquiry. Then the third turning of the four noble truth is always concerned with the realization part, that is enlightenment, born of the bhavana or meditative practice of discipline, and they are based on the following or the follow-up of the second turning. The Buddha under the third turning proclaimed as follows. First Noble Truth, third turning. This Noble Truth of Dukkha has already been understood. Second Noble Truth, third turning. The cause of Dukkha, which is craving, has already been abandoned. Third Noble Truth, third turning. The cessation of dukkha has already been realized. Then fourth noble truth, third turning, the path that leads to the cessation of dukkha, which is the Noble Eightfold Path, has already been cultivated. So the third turning is about awakening, all of the third turning. Wisdom that we develop via both our earlier hearing of the Sutta, first turning, and subsequent reflection and contemplation of the truth under second turning, can then prepare the base for us to receive the subsequent truth born of the third turning of the Four Noble Truths, leading to the third type of wisdom called Bhavana Maya Panya, which is the wisdom born of Bhavana or the meditative practices of training or discipline. The meditative practices and training under this third turning will have to cover all of the Noble Eightfold Path factor, with particular emphasis on the first path factor of right view or right understanding, supporting the Samasati and Samavayama, which is the four leading to the perfection of the remaining five factors. It will encompass all of life. Hence the importance of daily mindfulness and faithfulness to bring about the fulfillment of the Satipatthana and the Noble Eightfold Path practices. The above has helped me a lot in my search for truth, and I hope you may find them beneficial too. By and with metta, always. So this part, the three turning of the Four Noble Truths and its 12 modes, they are very, very important, essential training for cultivating. So bear that in mind. Yeah? Okay, then the next one is another event. Thank you for your very clear explanation of the three turnings and the 12 modes of the Four Noble Truths. I think they show very clearly that it is important to know when to study and think, and when to meditate, which in turn shows how important it is to be helped by a guiding teacher. In my experience, it is very easy to cling on to the first turn because it is so interesting, and not getting down to the nitty-gritty of the second turn, where all the fun hard work is. Because I think it is only through meditation and the developing of mindfulness in daily life that we can truly understand suffering, abandoning craving and realize cessation. It is only through the joyful effort that we can apply the whole of the Eightfold Path and experience of the third turning. In the Tibetan tradition, that I used to belong to, I think the equivalent of these three were probably hearing, thinking and meditating, which is a sort of right. But it seems to me that we need meditation to accomplish the second turning, as well as the realization of the third turning. So think would not seem sufficient for the second turning. I could be wrong about this. Most of the teaching in the Theravada tradition seems to be in the Tibetan tradition too. But somehow, they don't quite add up to the exact same thing. I understand from what you said that some people with right karmic potential are capable or able to be completely free by simply hearing, or the first turning wisdom. Are there some people also who, although not fully right, can be free simply through contemplation, that is, thinking, as opposed to meditating? So they do not need to go through all the meditation or training. I believe in the second turning. I wonder if this is why Tibetans call it simply thinking. So there was a question, huh? Then she said, well, those last two paragraphs were nothing but fun conjecture. There I go, getting off track. Time to meditate. Whatever others can do, I need to do all of the second turning, I'm sure. But oh, what a lovely distraction. Back on track with a little ego, and how my mind enjoyed that little detour. Many thanks again, with much metta. Then after that, I replied to her. I think her name is Sue, this lady, S-U-E. I rejoice with your ability to understand the explanation of the three turning and 12 modes so far. Sadhu to you. Regarding the second turning, it's not really we are thinking in the actual sense, but instead it is mindful contemplation and mindful reflection on the Noble Truth via proper inquiry. There is some form of thinking, but it is very slow, and is born of the mindful contemplation and reflection on the Dhamma or truth, as proclaimed by the Buddha. It is not actually thinking, because in active thinking there is no contemplation. It is like a quiet mind with samasati or right mindfulness within. It's a state of creativity. It's just like a talented person or musician. When are they most creative? Usually they are most creative when they are alone in a quiet environment or in their quiet moment, supported by the tranquil stillness. In a similar way, this Dhamma contemplation of the second turning can only arise via this quiet mind in creativity and wisdom born of the three turnings. Can bring about enlightenment because they all lead to their respective wisdom or manya. This is how I understand it through my cultivation, and I sincerely hope it is of use to you all and the rest of you. Depend on. Then the fifth email for those who are new. Is very useful. It's about metta or loving kindness meditation and vipassana meditation for beginners. This one I will share with you, and maybe you all can benefit if you can have the understanding. I wrote to a sister. This sister, after she recovered from her cancer operation, then I think she went through some form of chemotherapy too. Then she tried some alternative medicine. Then she initially recovered beautifully. Then she determined and she promised to cultivate the meditation after that. So this was the email I wrote to her to help her develop the understanding. I wrote to her. I said, "Dear sister, really nice to hear from you again, and I'm really glad to know that you have developed the right understanding and self-confidence to cope with the present situation. Yes, you are right. One needs to be mentally very strong and calm to deal with such situations, and it is not easy for most people who normally lack understanding and support. How is your metta or loving kindness meditation progressing? Are you able to do it? And did Sister Kim pass you the 2 thin metta meditation books? They are photocopied. These are very good books and easy to understand, and I have used them before during the early days of my cultivation. Metta or loving kindness is best rendered as spiritual love or universal love. Metta, when properly cultivated and developed and well developed, is a consuming flame that purifies all mental defilements, and the result is the acquisition of a tremendous healing power, which brings about well-being and cure via the tremendous positive energy built up or developed. Metta is also a very powerful meditation therapy with psychiatric applicability to greatly improve mental and physical health by overcoming one's own fear, anxiety, worries, pain, unhappiness, sorrow and lamentation, etc. We are developing an atmosphere of love and happiness, leading to peace and tranquility of mind. The Buddha said, the practice of metta brings to perfection all of the good states of mind, beginning with dana or charity, leading to well-being, happiness, and the fulfillment of all the 10 perfections of virtue, paramitas. It is an easy and simple way to develop tranquility, wisdom, and compassion, the ultimate goals of all spiritual development. I will describe to you the metta meditation as given in one of the three books. Sit down in a comfortable and relaxed posture. Keep your eyes closed. In a quiet place, it can be a shrine, a room, or a park, or in any suitable place of silence. Repeat the word metta a few times and mentally conjure up its significance. Metta, metta, metta. Metta being love, being the opposite of hatred, resentment, impatience, pride, arrogance, etc. And as a profound feeling of goodwill, sympathy, and kindness, promoting the happiness and well-being of others. Now visualize your own face in a happy and radiant mood. Every time you see your face in the mirror, see yourself in this happy, radiant mood and conjure yourself in this mood during meditation. A person in a happy mood cannot become unhappy or harbor negative thoughts and feelings. Having visualized yourself in a happy frame, now charge yourself with the thought, may I be well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within your own heart and be friendly and loving towards all, not harboring any dislike, prejudice, or antipathy towards anyone. Wishing everyone well and happy, and promoting everyone's will. Whomsoever I look at, may I see with the eye of love. Whomsoever I speak to, may I speak with the words of love. Whomsoever I think about, may I be imbued with the thought of love. In this way, as the meditator suffuses themselves with the positive force of love or metta, he will become like a vessel filled with love, its contents ready to overflow in all directions. Next, visualize your loved one. See him or her in a happy frame of mind and project the thought, may my loved ones to be well and happy, healthy, without enmity, ill will, and untrouble. And may he or she too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. This thought force of metta, if properly radiated, can be very powerful. Then think of your other loved ones, your teacher, your parents, your brothers, your sisters, elders, friends, colleagues, etc. And radiate to each one of them the thought of metta intensely and in the manner described earlier. The visualization must be clear and the thought radiation must be revealed well. It must be noted that to think of metta is one thing and to radiate metta is another thing. That is, actively projecting the will force of metta from your heart is quite another. Next, one can visualize a neutral person, neighbor, etc. And having radiated loving thought to those in the neutral circle, one should visualize the person for whom one has dislike, hostility, etc. And radiate this same metta to them and wish them well and happy. Learn to forgive and forget. When we can forgive someone, we actually free ourselves, because no more evil roots of hatred or anger or dislike within our heart. Just forgive them all and radiate love or metta to them, and this will calm down your mind and make you feel a lot better. Just develop the metta meditation first until the positive metta force is very strong. very strongly down within you. And when you can really feel the rather soothing and positive metaphor flowing from your heart out, then you will feel very, very good. And your bodily cells will recuperate much faster to help bring about a speedier recovery to your unit. Bye, and may you and your family member be well and happy always. And may the blessing of the Triple Gem Tool be with you all. With metta. So this is the part on loving kindness, maybe loving kindness. Then the next one is on vipassana meditation. So this is another email I wrote to her. I will read to you. I said, nice to hear from you again regarding the meditation. It is very easy to develop concentration and spiritual consciousness so that your mind does not wander off. You can have the strong faith and understanding to develop it. Then I can teach you, no problem. You can also start with the metta meditation that I have emailed you earlier. Do you still have them? If not, I can forward it to you again. Regarding the formal meditation, I will now instruct you accordingly. First, call to mind with very strong faith all of the great virtue, wisdom, love and compassion of Lord Buddha, and feel them with your heart. His greatness, the fully enlightened one, and each of your pain for wisdom, compassion, and loving kindness to develop the initial faith and wisdom and spiritual calmness within your heart or mind. Then determine to develop this meditation to train the mind to be centered and peaceful so that it does not wander off. The initial training of the mind is done by being mindful or aware of the movement or action within your kaya or physical body. Or alternatively, we are anchoring your mind to your breath, to your breathing or breath. Just relax yourself and be mindful of your in and out breath. So that it does not wander off. Make the breath your anchor to train your mind to be centered, so that it can be calm, peaceful, and mindful within. Every time the mind wanders off, just bring it back to the breathing. Through this constant practice of about at least 45 minutes to 1 hour of sitting daily, the mind can be trained to be peaceful and calm. And once you have developed this initial calm and spiritual peace, a type of spiritual joy or bliss and tranquility will arise in your mind, and you will feel very good, happy and peaceful with it. This will make you like to meditate, because for the first time in your life, you will be able to experience the real spiritual peacefulness and calmness born of meditation or meditative training, which is very different from the worldly happiness, which are rather gross and very mundane. There are also some preliminary training required before you begin your meditation. First, you must have a very relaxed and stable sitting posture that can allow you to sit for quite a while without having to change your posture. Then your body and mind must be relaxed and allowed to harmonize so that they can support your meditation. To relax the body, you can use the mind sweeping method, that is, starting from your forehead, check with your mind and awareness to feel whether it is relaxed or not, whether there is any tension, tightness or stress within or not. If there is tension, use your mind to relax it. After that, slowly sweep it down to your eye muscle, facial muscle, cheek, chin, and do the same. Then go to your neck, shoulder, and then back to your neck, chest in, stomach, abdomen, buttock, and leg. After that, reverse the whole procedure by starting from your leg, buttock, and abdomen as you fall. Back to the forehead. The mind spring method to relax your body can also help train your mind not to wander off into heedlessness or heedless thinking. By anchoring it, the mind's attention to the various parts of your body that you want to do the relaxation. After you have done the body relaxation, you will now learn to relax the mind by telling it that you are going to meditate for the next 45 minutes or so. So please don't disturb. Don't come and disturb or distract you into thinking about certain things that you need to attend to as a time. The mind is very deceiving, and it will condition you to think and cause your mind to wander off from your meditative object or meditation object. To meditate is to develop the training or anchoring of the mind so that the mind stays with and is mindful of your object of meditation, which is the breathing in this case. And since your breath is always in the moment and it is fairly prompt, it is a very suitable meditation object, and even the Buddha himself used it during his time. This training of the mind will bring about the initial calm and make your mind peaceful, centered, and mindful within, so that it is ready to develop the vipassana or insight meditation, leading to wisdom to understand the characteristics of nature, our own form and mind, and to understand the secret of life. Initially, just train your mind to be peaceful, calm, quiet, and mindful within by anchoring it to the awareness of the in and out breath. Always remember, just breathe naturally and be mindful of the breath and maintain mental silence within. Train it until your mind does not wander, and then it will be naturally peaceful and calm by itself. This is already very, very good. This is the power of the well-trained mind. The Buddha said, the untrained mind is stupid and it will become the devil's workshop, whereas a well-trained mind is peaceful, calm and wise. Calm and wise. That's all for the moment, and I hope you can develop it well. This meditation is going to help you a lot by and with metta always. Okay, we stop here, huh? Because
it's a bit winding, huh? You can rest. Okay.